From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on August 7th, 2016, in the city of Rochester. Police officers were searching for an armed suspect. A 17-year-old named Ricky Bryant was riding his bicycle, but he was not the suspect police sought. What happened next is still under investigation, but we do know that Bryant was badly hurt. His family says RPD officers assaulted Ricky, who was punched, kicked, and sprayed with pepper balls. Bryant was not charged with the crime. His family says he was the victim of the officers. For the first time, City Council is using its subpoena power to get more information on a case. And this comes at a time when just about everyone involved with Rochester government is calling for some kind of change into how police conduct cases are reviewed. Now, earlier this month, we sat down with Ted Forsyth and Barbara Lacker Ware. They're the authors of a new report on police accountability. They are activists. They say the process is broken, that civilian complaints are almost never sustained, that there's very little transparency, that the police cannot be allowed to just investigate themselves if we want impartiality. The Center for Dispute Settlement is a part of that current process, and their leaders disagree with some of what Forsyth and Lacker Ware say. But CDS has also called for changes on their own. That was back in October. And coming up, we're going to explain what CDS would like to see change to make sure police conduct is reviewed in the most efficient and fair manner possible. And City Council has recently hired the Center for Governmental Research to conduct its own study of the issue. Their findings are due later this summer. So this hour, we sit down with guests that come from CDS, the Center for Dispute Settlement, and they include Frank Liberti, who's the president and CEO. Frank, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having us.
And Cheryl Hayward is director of the Police and Community Relations Program at the Center for Dispute Settlement. Cheryl, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Frank, I want to start with just making sure we step back once again for our listeners. Before we dive into possible changes, you know, we certainly want to talk about what CDS would like to have done, what, you know, your thoughts are on a little bit more detail about the report that has sparked a lot of conversation among mayoral candidates, city council. But let's talk about how this works now and the CDS role. So let's talk about a civilian comes in with a complaint about police conduct. They take that complaint to where and how eventually does it end up with you? Take me through the process.
Okay, a citizen can file a complaint directly with the Internal Affairs Office of the Rochester Police Department. That's referred to as PSS,
yep.
Professional Standards Section. Or, as an alternative, they can come to the Center for Dispute Settlement, or we could go to them if they have issues with getting to us, and they can file a complaint through us. That complaint, if they file through us, then we forward that complaint with their permission to PSS, and they are subsequently interviewed by PSS, where we can provide a community advocate to accompany that person during that interview, because it can be intimidating. You know, you're now filing a complaint with the police. It can be an intimidating process, and so we provide the access to a community advocate who can shepherd that person through that process, and then keep them advised throughout the investigative aspect. Once that's done, then Internal Affairs will do their own investigation. They'll interview, they'll look for video of the situation. There's a whole litany of information that they'll gather. Mm-hmm. And then once they come to find out each of the allegations, and I will say that in most cases, a complaint investigation will have more than one allegation. It might be an allegation of excessive force. There could also be a procedural or courtesy or conduct allegation. That would all be investigated in that one review. Mm-hmm. Once they come to their decision, that comes to a three-person panel. They notify the Center for Dispute Settlement, and Cheryl could speak to that or how she schedules that review. But that comes before a three-person panel. Those panelists are citizens from our own community who are trained and certified mediators. They're trained to be neutral, which we believe is the strength of our program, is that, you know, you can have confidence that the people reviewing, the citizens from this community, from this city, are not going in with a bias. They're looking at the evidence as they find it, and if they have any questions about the depth of the investigation, they do not make a finding until they get the information that they're looking for.
And then what happens?
And then we make a recommended finding on each of those allegations that goes to the chief of police for the chief's final decision on each of those allegations. And then the chief would make any appropriate recommendations if there was training or discipline recommended.
Has the chief ever gone against what CDS recommends?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It has.
Yes.
And the chief ultimately has the final say on that.
Ultimately, yes.
Okay. So there's a look at the current process. What I want to do is kind of walk through Frank and Cheryl's response to some of the criticism, not necessarily, I think, of CDS, but just of maybe the mechanisms in place. And then we've got a lot to talk about when it comes to what they think, you know, maybe how the current system works and how it could improve. But some of the criticisms are this. What Frank is talking about when it comes to the review that happens, one of the criticisms is, well, your review is not really kind of its own internal investigation or its own investigation. It is based on what the police bring to you to review, that it may be narrow, it may be limited. So you can only work with what PSS, what they bring to you, and you're not really on your own conducting your own investigation. So the police bring you whatever they decide to bring you, and that limitation may limit your viewpoint on what's going on. Fair or not fair?
Not really fair.
Okay.
Because the first thing that we'll do as a panel, we'll read the complaint that's given by that complainant and the breadth of that complaint. Okay. So that let me give you an example. If in the initial statement from the complainant, he or she states that, you know, there was an independent person. I saw a neighbor. This incident happened. I saw a neighbor on their porch. I don't know who that person is. That would be a great independent witness. If in that investigation there's no mention of attempts to reach out to this witness, that is something that we would pick up on, and we would insist, we'd push back to PSS, why don't we have information from this witness, and please get it for us, and before we would make a decision. So we have the ability to push back on what we perceive as any shortcoming.
Does that happen, Frank?
Oh, sure.
So you're not as constricted as it has been portrayed?
Not at all, no. In fact, people fail to recognize we do have subpoena power. It's indirect subpoena power. If the way the procedure goes is if we have additional information that we want, we would go back to the lieutenant and the professional standards section. If we don't get that from the lieutenant, we would then go to the chief of police. The procedure then goes, if we don't get it from the chief of police, we go to the mayor. If we don't get it from the mayor, we go to city council, who ultimately has subpoena power. The reality of that is, if you have subpoena power, you never have to use it. Because who's going to refuse you information that they ultimately know that you're going to just go over their head and obtain that?
All right. So in essence, what you're saying is, you de facto, you do have subpoena power.
Exactly.
So that's been also mischaracterized,
you think? Yes, it is.
Okay. And just having that ability, you think, leads to more transparency or leads to more cooperation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
When it comes to the Ricky Bryan case, we're not going to ask you for any details because, again, there's a lot of investigation. City Council investigating. I know there's going to be a lot of work to go through in that case. But City Council, my understanding is this is the first time they have used that subpoena power to get more information. So that tells us that it can go all the way to city council in cases where they feel like we need all the information and we're not possibly getting it.
Exactly. And we're thrilled to see them taking that role.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying something. Cheryl, do you want to kind of comment on some of the process we've been talking about as well? Hear your thoughts on it. Go ahead.
Sure. As Frank mentioned, we are an alternative intake site, so citizens can come to us first or after they go to PSS if they feel a bit intimidated about it. So we help them draft up a summary of their complaint and forward that, as Frank mentioned, to the professional standards section. Once that happens, the community advocate, which I think is a vital piece, acts as a liaison between the investigative process and keeping that citizen informed of where they are in their complaint process. Many times before the complete investigation, if there is an excessive use of force allegation in there, goes before the CRB, I have had contact where the citizens will say, you know what, I've listed two witnesses. They haven't called. No one's contacted them. The community advocate then has the opportunity to call PSS and say, hey, there's been a complaint filed. There's been two witnesses that the complainant felt could provide detailed information. No one has contacted them. What's going on with that? And provide that citizen with the information. And vice versa. There's been many times where a complaint has been filed and the citizen isn't responded to opportunities that the PSS sergeant wants to connect with them. And the sergeant may call us and said, hey, you know, we're trying to get this person in because we want to start the investigation of their case. They're not responding. Can you help? So we really act as a liaison for the process to ensure that it's happening in a timely fashion. Once, if they're asked to come in for a deposition or an interview, the community advocate sits in the room with them and goes over the entire process with that citizen so they understand what to expect prior to the interview beginning. In that session, if the complainant may be becoming a little bit anxious, nervous, or upset, we have the opportunity to say, can we take a break, help that citizen kind of calm his or herself down, readjust, explain to them maybe some of the focus of the questions or the repetitiveness of the questions so that they understand what the role of this particular interview or the sergeant is looking at, is trying to get targeted information about how an officer addressed them, or maybe if it was a complaint of, you know, the officer put the handcuffs on too tight, how did he or she do this? What hand did he grab? How did he grab it? So the citizen is completely aware and has the opportunity to be comfortable and confident understanding what's happening.
All right, my guests come from the Center for Dispute Settlement, which is a central figure in how police conduct cases are reviewed. You just heard Cheryl Hayward, Director of Police and Community Relations Program for CDS. Frank Liberti is the President and CEO of the Center for Dispute Settlement. And again, as I mentioned here, this is all part of our discussions this month about not only that the report you saw from a couple of activists, Ted Forsyth, Barbara Lackerware. We talked to them earlier this month. Today we're talking to CDS. We hope to hear from police themselves on these issues coming up here. But we're trying to make sure we understand the full picture of how conduct is reviewed, because it's a sensitive issue here and across the country right now. As we work throughout this hour, we're going to talk about what CDS has proposed. But first, we're letting them respond to some of what's been out there in the last few months in the media, because again, I think what Frank and Cheryl are trying to at least present to our listeners is they think there's been some mischaracterizing. So, for example, Reverend Lewis Stewart has said there needs to be subpoena power. You heard Frank say there effectively is already. City newspaper wrote a lengthy piece on this, and I don't. You probably saw the city newspaper piece. Was it fair?
Yes.
Was it fair?
It was a fair piece. Yeah.
I thought Tim did an excellent job there. They highlighted a potential issue, because when Frank and Cheryl talk about the three-person board that will ultimately review for CDS,
yes.
Let me quote from city newspaper, and we'll see what Frank and Cheryl say about this. Quote, the legislation creating the civilian review board states that there will be 35 panelists, that they'll be volunteers, and that they'll reflect the demographics of city residents. According to the CDS report for the first half of 2016, there were only 9 panelists, not 35. Only 3 of them were Black, none were Hispanic, and several were CDS officials or staff members already. Given the extensive time required for training, it isn't easy to find panelists. But Liberti argues that for the review board's work to be credible, the training, including training and maintaining neutrality, is essential. In addition, the review board's work often takes place during the day, ruling out many possible volunteers. And the city's legislation was changed several years ago to require that all review board members be city residents, even further limiting the pool. So, city is pointing out that ideally you've got 35 panels to work from to create these three-person boards, that the demos reflect city residents, and that right now that's not the case. Is that a concern, Frank?
That is. In fact, what happened, actually, there was a review of the oversight process that Adam McFadden did under the City Council legislation for the Public Safety Commission. And that went on for, it was a monthly public review over an 18-month period that actually developed into some program enhancements that we actually made at that time, and were that gave rise to two critical aspects: the introduction of this community advocate position to address the concern for residents who want to file a complaint that they feel intimidated doing filing a complaint directly with a police officer. So having that community advocate available, and again, the community advocate does not advocate for the complainant, does not advocate for the police, but advocates to ensure a fair process. Okay, so the advocate is there to kind of shepherd the complainant through that process, as Cheryl so eloquently described. The other recommendation that we made, and has now become the fact, is to restrict the certified neutrals to only city residents. So prior to that, we had a much larger pool. But when that went into effect, our pool shrank, because prior to that, we would use any Monroe County mediator on that pool. We then shrank that pool by restricting it to city residents. Currently, we have 10 people who are panelists, and there's There's 40% African American, 60% white, I think there are 44 females and 6 males.
Okay, so just in terms of overall community representation, we can do a more effective job. I mean, if the Latino population looks at that, they say, we're not even represented on
right.
the board. That's got to change, right?
Yes, right. And we reach out to the Latino community and any community resident who has a sincere interest. And there's misunderstanding, too, that we kind of restrict that. We offer training as a certified neutral, which mm-hmm. is extensive training that requires 30 hours of classroom training. And for any city resident who expresses an interest in participating as a volunteer mediator and then subsequently a CRB panelist, we waive any tuition.
So, Cheryl, this is a situation where the CDS wants board members, wants panelists who do reflect the community, but you're not going to sacrifice the arduous training process because you think that's the bedrock of this, yes?
That is the bedrock of it. I think in order for us to police our community and ensure that it's a fair process, we have to make sure that the people that are reviewing the information are coming from an unbiased viewpoint, right? So because we are a neutral organization, we're not pro-police, nor are we pro-citizen, nor are we anti-police or anti-citizen. We want to make sure that the people that are in the room are able to set aside their own biases based on their experiences or differences and come in and be fact finders, review the information to ensure that, A, it was a fair investigation, it was a thorough investigation, and that investigation happened in a timely manner so that we get all the information, whether it be 911 records, whether it be videos, whether it be photos, whether it be body cams, and be able to look at the information and from that come up with the most appropriate finding, which often, may not necessarily be what the community expects it to be, but as long as it was a fair finding and our panelists are able to say, we thoroughly review this information as a fact-finding entity that came in with a neutral viewpoint to ensure that, it's fair across the board.
Okay. Now, some of the other criticism we heard, Ted Forsyth and others have raised the idea that, there's a conflict of interest because essentially what they're saying is that their understanding is that the city of Rochester pays CDS to do this, and therefore you have a financial incentive to provide results that might please city government, a.k.a. the police department. Now, I know you've heard that allegation. Let's start with this. Are you paid by the city of Rochester to do this work?
We're under the contract by the city of Rochester.
All right, so you are paid work. By the city. Is that a conflict of interest?
Not at all. In fact, I think that this is a disingenuous argument. Let me explain why. We're under contract. We're an independent agency. They also mischaracterize the breadth of the agency's work. The heart of Centers for Dispute Settlements work, and we cover 8 counties, the whole 7th Judicial District, is to train volunteers to become neutral mediators, really with the premise of community building, helping people find appropriate ways to resolve their disputes. This agency started as the first of what have become known as a CDRC, a Community Dispute Resolution Center, as an outgrowth of the civil rights movement when school busing issues back in the early 70s was polarizing communities throughout the country. That's the genesis of this organization. That's the breadth of the organization. The work that we do, this is an ancillary program to the heart of the work that we do. So we are under contract with city government. Why I say it's disingenuous is that the proposal that Mr. Forsyth brought forward with Ms. Lackaware is that they want to be an agency of city government and call themselves independent. It's just, we are an independent not-for-profit. And then to say that they characterize us as being dependent, we just hold a contract to manage a program that's outlined in city council legislation.
I think their argument goes something like this. You're paid by the city. You provide results that are ostensibly independent, and yet your reviews almost never find police in the wrong. And therefore, is there a concern that you are providing results that will make sure you keep getting that contract?
That gets into the data that they presented. Yeah. I have to draw a lot of exception to the data that they presented. They have presented And they acknowledge themselves. They only chose data that they believe that they wanted to look at, a.k.a. that supported their premise.
Well, what they said was they chose the data they did because they wanted to start with just civilian-generated complaints, not internal investigations that did not start with a civilian complaint. And they wanted to look at just use of force and allegations of excessive force.
Yes, right. What they did not include were the internal investigations and... I find this ironic. Actually, we made our recommendations to City Council in October, and that was in response to a public outcry over a situation that I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. That was a drug enforcement action by Rochester Police in one of the Rochester neighborhoods, predicated by a request from a City Council member to have the police do that. And there was some video that showed what could be some pretty egregious behavior. Okay. That complaint was investigated. That was an internal investigation. That was not generated by a citizen complaint. These internal investigations we're referring to that the report excludes doesn't include those types of behaviors. It doesn't include a high-profile incident where, for whatever reason, a complainant doesn't come forward. And there are many cases, and I'd ask Cheryl to speak to that. Yeah. How often do you take a complaint where it may not go forward immediately?
Right. We receive those many, many times. And a lot of times they can be high profile incidents. And so just because a complainant doesn't necessarily come forward, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't have the opportunity to look into the behavior of that officer or officers involved simply because the citizen may not know their opportunity to come forward or may not have been advised to come forward. However, I think it's important that we monitor the totality of our police and law enforcement actions when we're interfacing with our citizens. And so that's what some of the internal investigations come through and serve the purpose of saying, well, there's no citizen, so you know, if there's no citizen, then it doesn't happen. But it did happen. And so if we're able to say that we are policing our oversight, we should police every action that could be deemed inappropriate.
All right. And I think what Ted and Barbara said on this program was that, yes, if you include those internal reviews, the numbers change. But some of those internal reviews are for cases that to them are very obvious, that, you know, that anybody could see that mistakes were made or that lines were crossed. And that conversely, if there is not an internal review and a citizen, a civilian, has to make a complaint, that complaint is almost never sustained. Is that true?
No, it's not. No. We have sustained findings for use of force complaints.
But in the 2-5% range, right? I mean, it's a pretty low percentage if it's civilian generated, correct?
I can refer to the last 8 years of those reports. And actually, I would draw your attention to the last three of our reports. There were program enhancements that I just mentioned that actually were invoked in 2013 when we added the community advocate position, shrunk our pool of panelists to only city residents. And then it took a while to get a staff person on for the community advocate. Those initial complaint investigations in 2013 then began to come through as completed investigations, 2014, 15, and 16. So when you look at those 3 years and just the citizen-generated use of force complaints, we had a 9% sustained rate. If you add in, this is over the last 3 years, if you add in the internally initiated use of force complaints, we had a 13% sustained rate for use of force complaints. I draw exception to the incomplete data that was presented in that report.
Okay, you want to add to that, Cheryl?
As Frank said, you know, a lot of times investigations may not be completed in the year that they come into PSS or our offices. And so we still have the opportunity to make those findings and review those information. So, of course, you know, if you're just looking at what one data say as opposed to how that trickles into the year after or the year after, then, of course, you know, our numbers will definitely differ from someone that doesn't understand how that particular system works.
All right. And again, after our break, we're going to dive much more into what CDS thinks could still change or still improve this process. But, you know, the complaints that Cheryl and Frank have heard probably for years from some community leaders and activists like Reverend Lewis Stewart, people like Howard Eagle, they've called CDS a rubber stamp for police. You're hearing why Cheryl and Frank say that's not true. And they will then come back and say, well, why can't you overrule the chief? Ultimately, shouldn't we have a system in which if CDS reviews this, if we have these panelists to begin with, shouldn't we be saying You get the final say here if you're independent. Why should the police get final say?
That's one of our recommendations.
Yes.
So as we get into our second half hour, that's something that we have agreement on.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
So we're going to get there. Frank Liberti is the president and CEO of the Center for Dispute Settlement. Cheryl Hayward, director of the Police and Community Relations Program at the Center for Dispute Settlement. If you are wondering, by the way, what do various people running for office do? I hope these things aren't politicized, but it's an election year, and I think it's worth talking about this. So Mayor Lovely Warren says change in the system is necessary. She's not sure that the report recommendations from Ted Forsyth and Barbara Lackaware are the best path in totality, but she does say some change is necessary. Former Chief Jim Shepard has defended the system. He says it's often misunderstood, but he acknowledges that the public doesn't fully trust it anymore, so he does support some kind of change. Rachel Barnhart, a Democrat, says the current system relies far too heavily on the professional standard system, PSS, that's the police. And she says there is not enough independent input, so she wants to see a change too. Alex White is endorsing significant changes. So we're likely to see some kind of changes. Let's get a break and come back and talk to Frank and Cheryl about what exactly they have called for. Because the report that Ted and Barbara put out was released in February. The changes that CDS recommended go back to, I believe, October of last year. And we'll talk about how much of that they're still advocating, how much perhaps has changed. And we'll get your phone calls as well. If you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email me, edawson@wxxi.org. You can find me on Twitter, @EvanDawson, or producer Megan Mack at MMack Media. We're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the trans community of color is victimized by violence in ways that most of us don't understand, and that's partially because the media does not do a very good job reporting on it. We're going to talk about that next hour. We're going to talk about support services that are often lacking and what communities can do to better support all of its citizens. That's next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. In their letter to City Council in October, CDS put forward 8 possible changes. And I want Frank and Cheryl to kind of walk us through what they do think could make this system better. So start wherever you like here. Let's talk about what should change.
I just wanted to add one thing about what we found is incomplete data. We only talked about use of force complaints.
Okay.
What also was excluded from the Lackaware Forsyth report were the allegation findings for procedural violations, courtesy and conduct violations. When you look at the CRB sustained rate over this 15-year period they looked at, which I again would argue is far too broad a term, we had a 17% sustained rate. So I think that the argument that the CRB is rubber stamping internal investigations or police investigations, it just doesn't hold water. We sustained, in fact, over the last 3 years, the most recent 3 years, we had a 19% sustained rate for overall allegations. When you include the internal investigations along with the procedure and courtesy and conduct ones, the reason that in this work, as Cheryl alluded to, you have to monitor a police officer's behavior in all situations. It's, in fact, those underlying types of procedural or particularly courtesy complaints that if unaddressed or unaddressed to the officer could lead, tacitly condone that officer's behavior to escalate. It's those unaddressed procedural violations that may encourage an officer eventually to act inappropriately, and it could escalate to perhaps an excessive use of force. So addressing those things at the lowest level is really critical. The step before that, and is one of our recommendations, is really it's a training issue to prevent even the initiation of any complaint. If we have officers that are trained to recognize distinctions between people in their own implicit bias.
So you want bias training, implicit bias training
that's
for officers.
Correct. Yeah.
And I think some of our listeners will be surprised to hear, Cheryl, that that's not part of the system already. Is there anti-racism training? Is there implicit bias training happening at RPD right now?
I know they've recently developed that program. And so I'm not very well versed in what that looks like and how they deliver it to their officers at this particular stage. It is something that we recommend because Frank and I, we go through various different law enforcement agencies, and we do provide these trainings because it's important that people recognize how their biases can affect their interactions with citizens on just the most simplest level, that sometimes we don't realize what our experiences, our education, our information, how that then translate into particular, maybe biased interactions with. So it's important that they understand how their implicit biases may affect. We're not saying that it would, but it may affect how you choose to interact with a citizen at any given moment.
So that's one of the points that CDS is calling to change.
That's correct.
To codify a requirement for that kind of training for RPD. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, and we actually made a similar recommendation in 2012. I mean, we've been making these recommendations. A lot of the recommendations that we brought forward because they weren't invoked in 2012. One of them being we had suggested external investigations be conducted for high-profile cases. When there's an officer-involved shooting or someone that's significantly injured, we would encourage an outside agency to do that investigation. Certainly, if nothing else, it has an appeal to people to know that this is not the RPD investigating the RPD in a serious situation.
Okay, but let me back up and just say, I think people would say, if that is the standard for quote-unquote high-profile cases, number one, you're going to have to come up with some kind of a line to draw for what creates a high-profile case. And number two, shouldn't that be the system for all cases? Why is it only for the high-profile?
Well, actually, because it's very labor-intensive, I would say. Yeah. Right. And it's the most egregious types of cases that you would really want to potentially...
But if you guys are doing a really good job of reviewing this in an unbiased way with your panelists and the people you have trained to be neutral, I don't need an outside investigation, do I? If you're effectively a board that can investigate and make these determinations, I would want to trust you to do it on all cases.
Mm-hmm. Don't confuse it. We don't do the investigations. We review the investigation.
You review the investigation. Right. But I would trust. Okay, so, but I guess what I'm saying is I would want to be able to trust the system for all cases. Is that fair?
It's fair. What you've seen now is that we actually have a situation where there is an outside investigation being conducted. On an incident that was generated in Rochester. I think that just for the credibility, a lot of people have more confidence in an investigation from the outside if it's conducted by someone other than the police agency that actually is involved in it.
Okay, and so let's then jump to one of the other recommendations that CDS makes, which is that you want to be able to say it's not the police chief's ability to overrule this, that the finding is the finding. Because right now, that public perception that Frank just described is police investigating the police. And, you know, Frank and Cheryl are saying, we're not rubber stamping this. But if you're not, the chief still has the ability to make his own decision. I don't want to sit here and cast aspersions on the chief. He is available every time we've asked him to come on this program. Right. I don't think I've ever met a Rochester police chief who hasn't been available and at least willing to answer questions, accountable to us and the media. You know, I don't have any animus at all. I'm just pointing out that the public perception might be if the police ultimately investigate the police and the chief ultimately gets to overrule your board of panelists, then it's not independent enough is what people might say.
And that's what we recognize, right? So understanding that we do find our own findings and then the chief reviews and he develops his own findings, it's important for community confidence to say, well, you know what? The Civilian Review Board review this, and they found substantial reasons to sustain it. Therefore, that finding should be that, and then the chief then determines discipline, if you know, and how that levels out. So we recognize that we have the power to make these findings, but then what, right? So how does that translate to the public understanding the process for the Civilian Review Board reviewing an investigation and then making a finding, if then it goes to the chief to decide, well, I agree or don't disagree. Yeah, and then he or she then moves forward. So we want to say, you know what, here is our finding. This you know, with the confidence that we are coming in as neutral entities, reviewing information that's provided by your sergeant's complete investigative work, then we should be able to say we find it to be sustained, exonerated, unprovable, or unfounded. Whatever the panelist comes up with in their findings, that should be the formal finding, and then the chief acts accordingly when it comes to whatever discipline that needs to happen for that officer.
Frank, you think that's going to be well received as an idea here?
I would hope so. It's a twofold recommendation. First is that the civilian review board be the official finding for each of those allegations. Mm-hmm. And then subsequent to that, that the chief, whenever the chief disagrees with that official finding, that he or she then goes, and I would suggest before city council on a monthly basis, and articulate their rationale to the extent possible, because they're restricted to as to identifying officers. It's all predicated on state regulations and the Taylor Commission and the collective bargaining unit. But those are arguments that need to be made actually in Albany. We don't have the ability I don't believe that any independent agency would have the ability to impose discipline. I don't know of any agency that does that. So it ultimately has to be the chief imposing the discipline. If that needs to change, it really needs to change through the Taylor Law, through the civil service civil service law, and the confidentiality of Article 58.
All right. So other proposed changes.
One of the things, based on how we've interacted with the citizens that have come into our offices, is to develop a system where citizens can present their grievances to a panel made up of civilian review board panelists as well as a PSS sergeant or administrative RPD official to decide how that case then moves forward, whether they can come up with a decision to either send it to a precinct section for review or investigation of the complaint, or take it to a full investigation deemed by PSS. So it allows a citizen to have the opportunity to present his or her case or complaint to a board that says, you know what, this is what's happening. Here's how we triage it. Let's move this forward to a complaint, to a full investigation, or we deliberate and then move it accordingly, whether it be down the level or give that particular citizen information at this particular point. As a community advocate, I was in that position prior to becoming the director. And so those were things that I would hear from citizens. They just wanted to tell their story to someone. Sometimes they weren't necessarily looking for a full investigation, but they wanted to describe their story and get some kind of immediate response on how it goes, right? Many times they're looking for validation in their experience. That's not our role to validate, but what we do ensure that they understand the process to move forward in filing a complaint if they found that their interaction with that officer was egregious or just an ineffective experience for them.
Let me read just, before we get into anything else that CDS thinks should change, a little bit of feedback. A statement from Monroe County's public defender, Tim Donaher, is supportive of CDS. Tim writes, "I'm very supportive of CDS, both the general work that they do and the specific work they do investigating citizen complaints made against RPD." And then Tim writes to CDS, "You and your staff always strive to be neutral and fair while remaining cognizant of the competing interests in effectively handling complaints against police officers. Additionally, you and your staff always make sure you protect the legal rights of complainants who bring complaints while facing criminal charges. And finally, we have never had a client, as far as I'm aware, ever feel like CDS was acting to protect the interests of RPD or an individual officer to the detriment of the complainant," end quote. That's Monroe County's public defender, Tim Donaher, and that stands as a bit of a counter to again, some of the people that who have said that CDS kind of rubber stamps or is operating too close to the police department. Shane on Twitter says, "Can you ask why the number of complaints sustained in Syracuse are so much higher than Rochester now that Syracuse has a police accountability board?"
Actually, they don't have one active at this point. And our numbers, that's I'm glad that somebody asked that. If the example that was given actually was the first premise of the Lacquerware Foresight Report, was that Syracuse in 2015 sustained...
like 26%.
26% of the use of force complaints. When you look at just the use of force complaints that we in Rochester did in 2015... We actually sustained use of force complaints when you include the internal ones, which we discussed earlier. We had a 22% sustained rate. And again, it's the incomplete data that was presented in that report. To be real candid, it's a premise looking for looking for and at only the information that I believe they believe supported their premise. It's incomplete data. That's why we feel so strongly that. They're giving disinformation to the public.
Do you have any discomfort with the fact that that Ted and I think Barbara as well self-identify as activists? That they say they care about this community, that they have concerns, and that I don't think they would agree that they went out to create a report that just justified their biases. But they do self-identify as activists, and they certainly don't shy from that label. Do you have a discomfort with reports from someone who is an activist, Frank?
No, I don't at all.
Okay.
In fact, as much as I believe the data is inaccurate, really, I'm really glad that it keeps focus on this issue. Activism on both sides of an issue keep focus on its issue. The heart of the work that we do is community building. The neutrality that we do in this work of oversight for law enforcement, as Cheryl mentioned, that's a critical aspect of it. There are many places around the country where people are appointed to as panelists on civilian review boards that they're not vetted. Or are they political appointees? Do they have an anti-police bias? Do they have a pro-police bias? Our society in large these days is much, much too polarized. The community building work that is really the heart of the mission of our agency is to build community, not to further cause divisiveness. What you'll find actually in Syracuse, I say that it's not active at this point. They just hired someone a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, according to their website, their citizen review board has public meetings scheduled through December now, and it's called CRB, but I think they have a PAB, Police Accountability Board, that will be different. I don't know exactly the system there. Point being, according to their website, their CRB, Citizen Review Board, is having meetings through December. I don't know if they're how long it's been active, though.
But. Yeah.
Right. I believe their new director just came on June 21st, and their previous director left at the end, sometime in December. And so they do hold meetings, but their process is a lot different than our process in terms of...
Ted and Barbara say it's better. And I think, tell me if I'm mischaracterizing, Cheryl and Frank, mm-hmm. that when Ted and Barbara in their report, they point to Syracuse, 26% sustained. They point to Rochester, 2% sustained. Mm-hmm. And what I think what I'm hearing from you is that those numbers in Rochester are cherry-picked and that we're a lot closer to Syracuse's numbers already. Is that correct?
Very much so, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I think it's important that the community knows that the Civilian Review Board only reviews get allegations with an excessive use of force complaint in it and or a criminal entity. And within that complaint, there may be other allegations of procedural courtesy or conduct. The Police and Community Relations Program, we supervise all the complaints that come in. And so we have audit authority for the other cases that do not go in front of the Civilian Review Board panels because there was not an allegation of excessive use of force. And so we have the opportunity to go in and randomly select those allegations or those complaints that had just a procedural or courtesy or conduct complaint in it and review those to make sure that they are also timely and fair and thorough in the investigation of that complaint.
Okay. In our final minutes, I just want to make sure we're clear then on what they think should change and what could change. And you've heard some of that from Frank and Cheryl from the Center for Dispute Settlement. One of the criticisms, as I mentioned earlier, from Reverend Stewart was you need subpoena power. Frank said essentially you have it already.
Yes.
Okay. So Stewart also says that we must find a way of attracting more involvement from community residents to serve on the review board. I don't think you disagree.
No, I don't disagree at
all. That's something that you're actively working on. Then he says, fourth, in order for any independent agency to carry out its mandate, it has to be funded. It's got to be funded as an agency. It's under the auspices of City Council. If it's going to carry on this task, it must have a budget of at least $500,000 for the first year. It must be able to hire director, staff, researchers. Thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I don't. You know, if you're going to do a complete independent investigations, $500,000 may begin to approach that. Here, give me an example. We are now finding, especially with the introduction of body-worn camera video, the civilian review panels, we recently reviewed a couple of cases that took the panelists 16 hours to review. This is just a review of a completed investigation. I wonder how many hours it took to actually do the investigation. So
if you were investigating from scratch, it would be well over 16 hours.
Well over 16. Right.
It'd be hundreds of hours.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So practically, and I think that gets to our recommendation, you know, from 5 years ago. In practicality, you know, at Internal Affairs, they have 6 sergeants, 2 stenographers, and a lieutenant. I mean, this is a big unit to accomplish these investigations. So if you're going to replicate that, I don't think, actually, $500,000 wouldn't even come close.
You need full-time staff.
We need definitely.
Staff,
and multiple staff members. Again, right now they've got 30, the goal would be 35 possible panelists. Right now you have 10,
right.
But you would need to make full-time staff to do that. So what Reverend Stewart is suggesting there is not enough money, and it does not sound like you think it is feasible.
And if City Council were willing to do that, certainly, I mean, it would be...
If they want to fund it, okay.
Yeah, right.
But and then the question of, you know, what's the experience of the investigator, right? So how is he or she trained to investigate, especially unbiasedly, and to get the appropriate information that you need to garner to make sure that whoever is reviewing this case has all the information that was accessed.
So. All right, so we've talked about a number of possible changes, but let's say City Council comes to you and says, we're going to give you your wish list of one. What's the one thing that really needs to change to make police review more accountable and a better process?
Then I would combine that the CRB be the official finding, and then whenever the chief disagrees with that finding, he, in a public setting, I would suggest City Council meeting, articulate his rationale as to why he disagreed with that.
So I think if he wants to disagree with CRB, he must do it publicly, to City Council.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Do you expect that to happen?
I would hope so. I would hope so, yeah. I mean, I think the current tenor on this topic across the country these days is that change must happen. We've been in the forefront of suggesting change, I mean, as recently as October, prior to that in 2012. Actually, we made recommendations in 1995, 93, 89. Our oversight work goes back to 1978. And through that, a different... iterations of how this process works, and we've always looked to improve the procedure. Certainly, in these times, we need to respond to a public who has expectations and demands for more transparency.
This
gets to that.
Is this the edgiest it's been since you've been involved in this process of reviewing police conduct? Is this as difficult and as much tension as you've ever seen?
No, it's always contentious.
I mean,
in this work, you're never going to please everybody. There are people on extreme poles, and I think we've heard from some of those folks. You know, you mentioned activists. There are people on the other side of that issue, too, who are, you know, pro-police, and any encounter that a police officer has with a citizen is only because the citizen might have done something wrong. There are people on that end of it, and there are people on the other end that any encounter that a person, particularly a person of color, has with a police officer is only because the police officer is racist. We have these polarized positions, and people take that position very firmly, and it doesn't add. So that to say, there are always going to be people that we don't please. Our point is that any system with oversight can't appeal to one or the other of those extreme poles.
Okay, and Cheryl, some final thoughts from you when we talk about what you think the community occasionally misunderstands about this conversation, and how we're going to be a community that has better trust among civilians, the police department, mm-hmm. and how conduct is reviewed?
Well, I think it's important. We've got our communities in a stage where they want to know, right? We're really good at letting them know what had happened, right? So what the incident is, but we're not very good at the follow-up with this is what happened after the incident, after the review is happening. So it's important that in order for these relationships to start to come together and improve, which is a part of the work that we do, the CRB is only one aspect of what we do in our police and community relations program. It's about bridge building, right? So developing those relationships between our citizens and law enforcement and ensuring that everyone, their rights and responsibilities are respected. And so that comes through a number of things. The implicit bias that we talked about, the opportunity to share their story, the opportunity for the CRB to make the official finding, the opportunity for our city council and our chief to explain their concurrence with us or this accordance with us to the public so that everyone is aware and well aware of what's happening in the system, what's happening with their complaints, and how that's being affected not only through their community members serving on the panel, but how their law enforcement officials are dealing with those situations as well.
In 20 seconds, if we've got listeners who live in the city of Rochester who might want to get trained to do this work, can they approach you? How would they do that?
Yeah, please contact the Center for Dispute Settlement at our agency 546-5110. We're also located at the Reynolds Arcade Building, 16 East Main Street, or you can go to our website, cdsadr.org.
From the Center for Dispute Settlement, that's Cheryl Hayward, Director of the Police and Community Relations Program. Frank Liberti is the President and CEO. I know there will be ongoing discussions on this. We're going to do our best not only to hear all sides, but occasionally bring them together. Frank was kind enough to call the last time Ted and Barbara were here, but we're going to have more conversations, I'm sure, with people with a lot of different stakes in this community. Come back, I hope. Let's continue the conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, short break, much more connections next.